Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008. The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you doing?
Yes, we are still living with the whole whirlwind of accusations of sexual harassment and assault, and in particular, after having spoken last week about the issue of potentially getting rid of evidence that was lodged by people who did it anonymously. We had this discussion. Elazar Stern, current minister in government, who was a candidate for the head of the Jewish Agency and formerly the chief manpower officer of the IDF, got himself into the storm by saying that he'd actually shredded evidence that people had presented of complaints which were presented anonymously. Now the latest, besides the whole Bill Gates Microsoft story, which has come out this morning, Israel has its own set of issues to confront, and the latest storm surrounds the memory of Shimon Peres, because one of the current Labour members of Knesset, Colette Avital, has come out saying that she actually experienced a sexual harassment incident perpetrated by Shimon Peres, and that she did not report at the time for reasons that only she really understands and knows. She claims that there was a report lodged to the head of the bureau at the time, who was Yossi Beilin. He denies knowing anything about it. But she has now come out saying that she wants to make it public. There are some other accusations which have potentially been leveled against Shimon Peres. So here we're into a situation where not only do we have to think about accusations which are being made anonymously against people currently around and potentially trying to gain public office, but we're now also involved with accusations against people who have passed away, and they have no opportunity to put things into perspective. What do people think about raising this in history in a very kind of one-sided fashion? I mean, on the one hand, I absolutely agree that sexual harassment is not something that we should tolerate. How do we deal with reporting it? Is it okay to raise it now? Colette Avital says this is not designed to stay in his memory in any way.
Oh, really? Well, it doesn't matter what the design is or not. That's what's going to happen. You know, you can't say – I always say to my wife, and she says, I'm not fighting with you. And I'll say, you can't fight – you can't say you're not fighting with me while you're fighting with me. You know, you can't say this is not going to ruin somebody's
– you can't pull that pistol out and say you're not fighting with me.
Right, exactly, exactly. You can't say I'm not, you know, I'm not ruining his – I'm not – it's not designed to ruin his reputation. It's interesting. I threw this out to listeners, I think it was last week, Friday, and I asked him the question. We got quite mixed answers. Somebody said that, you know, it sometimes can take somebody who has suffered some form of sexual harassment years to have the courage to come forward. But I do think that given who the parties are here and that now one has a voice and another doesn't have a voice, I think that we need to be very, very circumspect before putting this out into the public, especially because the person, there's no defense. You are making an allegation against a person who cannot defend themselves. There's obviously an absence of proof. If there was proof, obviously maybe that's something different, but I'm very troubled by this.
I'm troubled too. I mean, I think there is also another thing that we need to give consideration to, Howard, which is the environment in which we currently live. Perhaps back then, I mean, this accusation apparently goes back to 1984. Okay, so this is not from yesterday or last week or last month or even in the last few years. This is a very, very long-standing, long-ago incident. And one might argue that back in 1984, this was just not – there was no environment that would have tolerated some sort of an accusation like this coming up, particularly given that at the time he was actually serving in office as prime minister, and obviously there were greater consequences. But potentially we could say that now, almost 30 years later, or more, almost 40 years later, the environment is different. The Me Too movement, whatever, you know, whatever we want to talk about, and things have moved ahead substantially since then, and perhaps now it's more accepted to be able to come out with something like this. I don't know. I'm troubled with it too. I don't have a firm view one way or the other, but it's certainly something which I think we need to think about. And it would be nice to have some sort of an accepted way of dealing with these things, which is, you know, respectful to all parties concerned.
I'd love your thoughts. 34519 or 0618951019. Is there a time? Are there circumstances when an alleged victim can't anymore, cannot bring the allegations forward anymore? Is it fair on the victims? I don't know. I am very, very conflicted about this. I'd love your thoughts. I know it's not an easy one to form an opinion around, because there are so many aspects to it, but that's also okay. You know, sometimes we also don't need to have all of the answers. We can be conflicted. I'd love your reaction, please. 34519 or 0618951019. Let's talk about COVID-19 in Israel. 8,000 deaths. Israel has now passed 8,000 deaths. What's the current situation?
So what's interesting about the fact that we've now unfortunately passed this very grim milestone, with 8,000 people having died, in fact, 8,010 in total. What's interesting is that, in fact, the last wave, the fourth wave that we've experienced, has apparently been one of the most deadly waves so far, even though people were vaccinated during the course of the wave, and even though we did see a kind of a different way in which the pandemic was handled during this particular wave as a result of the experience that we've had before and as a result of the vaccinations. And also, let's bear in mind that everything effectively remained open. We didn't go into a lockdown, a severe lockdown. There were some restrictions that were put in place, but no across-the-board lockdown was experienced. This was one of the more deadly waves that we've experienced. And now we're at the end of the fourth wave, and feeling a lot more calm and collected and comfortable with the way things are going. The numbers are significantly lower, approximately 1,000 people, new cases diagnosed over the last 24-hour period. Active cases currently around 17,500, and a number of serious people who are seriously ill, less than 400, around 350. And we have 6.2 million Israelis who have received at least one vaccine dose, 5.7 million have had two, and 3.8 million out of the total population of approximately 10 million have had a third booster dose. And we're seeing a decrease in the numbers, partially because some of the previous doses are still in effect, so no need to receive a booster dose right now if you've received your second dose relatively recently. Also, we're seeing a lot more opposition. Even though we've seen a great effect to our economy and to the way that we're able to operate by being vaccinated, people are concerned about the fact that we're going to have to continue to get vaccinated every 6 months or whatever it is, and what the impact on our health might be longer term. So there are certainly an increasing number of anti-vaxxers, not because they necessarily feel that what's happened up until now has been bad, but they're still concerned about what we don't know about moving forward as we move into a much more regular pattern of vaccination, which seems to be our fate, at least for the time being. One of the interesting things that came out just today is that Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has authorized the expansion of the so-called Green Classroom pilot program that reduces the quarantine time for students who have been exposed to virus carriers. And the pilot says that any student who's been exposed to someone with COVID-19 is able to return to school right away as soon as they receive a negative test, so they can have effectively a home test, which is available for free from Magen David Adom. People can go along and pick them up as they need. They're also available to be bought for a relatively small sum of money in local pharmacies. You can have a home test done, and providing you have a home test done and you come out negative, those students can then return back to school. This is currently in place for grades 1 through 12, and is expected to be expanded as well to daycares. Those students who've been exposed to people who are carriers of the virus will not, however, be entitled to go ahead and undertake activities which require a so-called green pass. So as long, they'll be allowed to go to school with a negative test, but they won't be as free to move around in their general lives, to go to the gym, to go to restaurants, to go to other places that need green pass certifications. And they're also not being encouraged to be in touch with other students who are not part of this program. So the effort right now is really being focused on keep things open as much as possible. Don't keep people at home. The cost of quarantining, the cost of closing things down has now really come to the fore, given that we have a vaccination program, that people are free to go and be vaccinated as and when they wish, and people are being encouraged to be vaccinated. There is now the allowance that those people who have responded negatively to the Pfizer vaccine, which is the most predominant vaccine being used in Israel, are being given the AstraZeneca one instead, in order to try to alleviate whatever symptoms they suffered. And there are people who have suffered symptoms from being vaccinated, no doubt. Most of us suffer a day or two of a sore arm and sort of slightly weak, flu-y symptoms, but there are people who have suffered it longer, a week or two or three, feeling down and feeling a little tired and lethargic. But it seems as if, though, on the whole vaccination program has gone ahead very well and has really allowed us to move forward and to reopen. And, you know, as I say, the number of people who've passed away during the fourth wave, approximately 1,000 people, have needs to be set against the backdrop of business as usual, open, everything has been open. And I think that that really is the direction in which we're moving right now, to try as much as possible to prevent people from having to go into quarantine, to go into lockdown. Reopening tourism, there's still talk about allowing foreign visitors to come to Israel, providing they've been vaccinated. There is relatively free movement for Israelis who wish to travel abroad, as long as you've been vaccinated and as long as the country that you're traveling to will accept you. There is no limitation on people traveling out of Israel. Returning back to Israel requires you to have a test at the airport, as usual, to be tested right away. So tests are the order of the day, and keeping things open, that's the watchword.
Absolutely. And yeah, I'm just looking at the time. We do have a few minutes. Sweden's foreign minister is visiting Israel for the first time in more than 10 years. Tell us about this.
Yes, so Ann Linde is Sweden's foreign minister, and Sweden and Israel have had a very tenuous relationship over the last decade or so. Diplomatic relations have been in place, but there hasn't been any kind of friendliness between the two nations. So the visit by Ann Linde this week to Israel, I think, is a very important moment. And I think it's a moment when Israel has come to the realization that even though Sweden is very, very liberal in its views, and in particular in supporting the Palestinian cause in every possible way, and Israel's considered that to be diplomatically contrary to Israel's best interest in the international community, in spite of all of that, I think that we've come to the understanding that, Sweden's support of the Palestinian cause hasn't really caused significant damage to Israel in any meaningful way. There has been talk about potentially supporting anti-Semitism or giving rise to anti-Semitism or fueling the flames of anti-Semitism. And we have seen quite a lot of anti-Semitism, anti-Israel feeling in Sweden. Interestingly, Sweden hosted just last week in Malmo a conference on anti-Semitism in order to bring to the attention of particularly the Nordic countries issues relating to anti-Semitism. And in fact, when Ann Linde, the Swedish foreign minister, visited President Yitzhak Herzog yesterday during their meeting, she was thanked by the president for hosting this Holocaust Remembrance, International Forum on Holocaust Remembrance in Malmo, which obviously also focused a great deal on the issue of anti-Semitism in order to try somehow to bring attention to combating anti-Semitism. And Anne Lindy herself said, you know, we don't necessarily have to agree on the issues, but it's good to have a dialogue going, and that was certainly echoed in her meeting with Israel's Foreign Minister Yair Lapid. So I think all in all, even though we know, for example, that Anne Lindy today will have meetings with the Palestinian Authority officials in her visit to the West Bank, and that's really, you know, her agenda is to be seen to be supporting both Israel and the Palestinian cause, but this time around really supporting Israel. So for the first time, Israel and Sweden seem to be talking again. I think that's a good thing. And I think what we've discovered is that, you know, even with such strong international support for the Palestinian cause, they somehow have done themselves enough damage over that time to somehow dilute the support that they've had from countries like Sweden in the international community.